Hello.
You're on with Nick and Fiona.
But it's so much worse. I would rather suffer through the racism.
Welcome to The Playlist, where we talk about movies and TV shows that are worth your time. I'm Fiona Williams, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Bassine. Hey, Nick, what are we talking about today?
Fiona, today we're talking about the movie Us, horror/family comedy. From Jordan Peele. Well, at least I thought it seemed like a little bit like a family comedy. We're also talking about a new show on SBS, Project Blue Book. And we're talking about what we've been watching, as per usual. But first, Us.
Can't believe how big they've got.
Did you hear Gabe got a boat?
Crawdaddy!
He's kidding, right?
He's not kidding.
Hey, I think it's Vodka Clock.
Oh, yeah.
Where's Jason?
Jason!
Where were you?
I didn't know if you were lost. Stick with me and I'll keep you safe.
Right, so Us is written and directed by Jordan Peele, who wrote and directed Get Out. It's about a woman, Adelaide, who with her family goes back to a place where she was lost at one point for 15 minutes, but it was a very traumatizing experience. She's nervous about going back. And it turns out that she had reason to be upset and disturbed because there are doppelgangers, duplicates, the tethered, haunting the area, basically. And she and her family come face to face with their exact replicas.
Mm, they're coming to get you.
That's the premise. I mean, there's a bunch of other stuff going on that we can talk about.
We'll get into that.
but that's the basic. That's basically what happens.
It's like a scary counterpart.
Yeah.
Except I didn't find it all that scary. But maybe we'll get to that too.
I was pretty nervous going in because I don't like pop out and gory, scary movies. But you're right. I agree. I don't think this was that scary.
We're going to agree, aren't we?
We don't argue about anything on
we
this
need
show.
To.
We just agree that we should call
Thank
this show the agreeing show.
The agreeable movie discussion
How to get along.
Show. All right. Lupita Nyong'o is in this. She plays
Adelaide. Yeah.
Adelaide and her tethered.
They all have names.
Other,
Did you
red.
Notice how in the, I didn't pick up anybody's names during the movie, but apparently
yes.
They've all got names.
Yes. So Lupita plays the grown woman, Adelaide, who as a child, 23 years ago in the 80s, 86, was at a theme park by the seaside in Santa Cruz, went into a hall of mirrors and encountered more than a mirror. It was another version of herself, her other.
Right, yeah.
Yes, and was suitably freaked out by that experience. So it, Jordan Peele, what I loved about Get Out, I thought that was managed to be scary and thrilling and funny and intelligent about America's horrendous past and present and complicated dealings with race. And I thought that was all wrapped up in an excellent film that straddled multiple genres.
Yes.
Agreed. I was hoping for the same with Us. Coming off that kind of pedigree, he's so good at articulating really complicated theories and stories, and that's in here as well. So, like, you know, the idea of there's an us, obviously there's going to be a them, it's us versus them, you know, you're your own worst enemy kind of thing, and it's all about a divided America. So it's very much of its time, and there's a nasty underbelly, these simmering tensions. So that's all there. Like, you know, it's – I think the premise is really good. And I was there for it. As a horror film, it didn't work for me because I wasn't scared in the slightest. And the jumps, people around me were jumping. Normally I do. Like I'm a sucker for like a cheap boo kind of thing. And it normally gets me. But here I just didn't feel it. I was really aware of the music cues.
Me too, well, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
And you shouldn't be.
No.
And there is a twist at the end that I could see coming a mile away, which makes me think, you know, I've seen that there's a lot of writing about this film. I'm really interested in all the theories and
yeah.
I'm loving that. And people do seem to have been taken by the twist and there's a lot of positive writing about this film. I'm not writing it off completely, but as a horror film, it didn't work as a horror film for me, but I really like the underlying kind of theories within it.
What do you mean by the simmering underbelly?
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, it might be getting a little too into the plot, but there's the opening slate of the film is that there are these tunnels across America and no one really knows what they were built for or what's within them. And as
they're
the film
abandoned,
plays out.
Abandoned, people live in them, apparently. Yes,
apparently. There's this simmering resentment, you know, when Lupita and family's others show up, the tethered come, they're very resentful, they want their time in the sun. So it's kind of this literal haves and have-nots, like literally. Lupita and her family have the nice life, have the very middle-class college lifestyle, the house by the beach, the family who look exactly like them and want what they have don't have that. So, yeah, there's a literal have and have-not kind of class divide story going on in this that is very relevant to the times in which we live. But I didn't think that the story conveyed that well. Like, that's a great premise, but in the way it plays out in the story, it didn't work for me.
I was racking my brain trying to come up with theories like that.
All right.
And either it's because of how well Get Out does it, and now, like you said, those are expectations now that that this is going to function on a million levels and it's going to be super smart and do everything. But whenever I came up with anything like that after the movie, I thought, well, I didn't feel that at the end, you know, and that didn't resonate or anything. And I felt like I wondered, are we giving this movie or trying to prescribe meaning to this movie when maybe it's just, he just had the idea, it's a horror movie, the bad guys look just like you. That's it. It's creepy. That's it. Because I couldn't come up with any satisfying, although I kind of like the class thing, maybe that sort of works, except by the end, I'm not thinking about that really because of the twist, and it just isn't driven home, I don't think. And so in the end, I found it to be kind of meaningless, and that was very disappointing, and I didn't care about that twist. I didn't think that twist is that interesting. And I have seen some of the theories about why different things are the way they are, and that's kind of fun. Yeah. I get it.
Yeah, yeah. It makes for a lively conversation afterwards, certainly. Yes. Yeah, the drive home was quite fun,
right.
You know, theorizing all different things, but also going down a story thread, but then going, well, hang on, if that happened, then no.
Yeah,
so
there
was a lot of that for me as well. So I don't think it very neatly articulated who are these people, where do they come from, you know, how.
Yeah, so it's a. It's
if
a,
that twist is real, then what happened with that thing? So there's a very great spoilery conversation to be had. So meet me offline if you. I don't
can
know.
We not have, can we
I
not
mean, we
talk
can.
About,
you can skip ahead a bit if you want to. But
because to me, it's government experiment gone wrong. Is that the practical?
It's never really articulated. I didn't think.
No, I guess not.
It's not explained how, who built these tunnels.
Yeah.
Why are they
eating rabbits?
There is a very strong rabbit analogy. Well, they're literally in the film. Big year for rabbits. You've seen The Favourite. Could well be the same rabbits.
Yeah,
there's an animal trainer putting the kids through college with all the rabbit work in movies at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
But anywho, there's a very strong references to the number 11. There's a biblical passage, Jeremiah 11:11, that comes through really strongly in the film. I believe says, therefore, this is what the Lord says. I will bring on them a disaster they cannot escape. Although they cry out to me, I will not listen to them.
Yeah.
So bad things
happen. And why?
I don't know why. I'm not Jordan Peele, but but there's also lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of movie references within there, and that's clever. Like, I think manage your expectations, and you might not be all that scared. But it's hard to write off completely because I enjoyed watching it, and it's shot beautifully, and the references are really good.
What are a couple of the references?
Well, like, it opens in 1986, where Child Adelaide is watching TV. There's an ad for the Hands Across America.
Yep.
A momentous event, you're from America, you may remember that.
Yeah.
That plays a part throughout the wider film, but you see a lot of videotapes around the TV.
Mm-hmm.
There's
Chud.
Chud, exactly.
I noticed that one.
Yes, a reference to subterranean kind
of
Oh,
is that
beings?
What Chud is about? Never seen it.
The Goonies, likewise, has an underground element. Also, there's a lot of references to The Shining, sort of like visual references, like you see the car driving through the wooded, those kind of helicopter shots, like what The Shining has. You see the family going to their summer home.
Good work. There's a thriller reference.
There's a very much a Michael Jackson thriller reference, maybe more than one.
Yep.
And when she gets a thriller t-shirt, you go, ooh.
Yeah.
In light
that.
Of recent events. Yeah. But also it's in a horror movie, so maybe that makes sense.
I decided the more I think about it and the more I think – Jordan Peele is a very exciting, entertaining, new, I guess you would call him an auteur because he writes and directs. Although I'm starting to think that stuff is overused and because I think it's pretty entertaining. Mm. And what I really liked about it, what kept me in it, even though in the end I thought it was kind of hollow, was he's mixing these horror conventions with, like I said before, it's kind of a family comedy. Like, there's jokes around. There's the goofy dad and your mother got out of the car. Or the name on the yacht is B-Yotch. Soup. Silly stuff like that. Tim Heidecker and Elizabeth Moss are very funny. And I really liked that. So I thought
it could have had more of that, though. I didn't think it was all that funny. Like, I think the friend in Get Out was great comic relief.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he kept it alive because he was so incensed and shocked and scared and really had his friend's back in that. Like, he was very energetic and lively as a funny foil to the weirdness of Get Out. Here I thought it tried for jokes, but they didn't quite. There was a look from the very unimpressed teenage girl, subtle, but yeah, they didn't work for me. I don't know.
Well, we are disagreeing.
Oh, look, there you go.
There you go. I liked those jokes. I really loved Tim Heidecker and Elizabeth Moss, and I loved when they're arguing about their kill counts.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes.
Oh, that was fun.
Fair point.
And I ended up feeling like here is a almost a rich man's M. Night Shyamalan. I know he's only done two movies, so we can hold off on these kinds of judgments. But he's into the twisty stuff. He's into the horror stuff. But it's entertaining in a way that I think M. Night Shyamalan wants to be.
Sure. Friend of the show, M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, you know, I'm excited by the idea of him doing Twilight Zone because that's coming. That's his next project.
Yep.
And this is quite heavily influenced by a Twilight Zone episode from...
Oh, is it?
The early days, yeah. Okay. Mirror Image with Vera Miles one about your doppelganger living in the world and wanting to replace you. And there's sort of the final scenes kind of are a nod to that. But I think
I want to hear the but.
I do think this just would have made a great Twilight Zone episode. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's not.
It's thin.
It is thin.
Yeah.
It is.
Yes.
Like it starts really well and I'm there for it. And then, sure. I admire it, but I didn't enjoy it and I wasn't scared, and that's what a horror movie wants you to be.
Okay.
And what do you make of all this quote-unquote elevated horror business? That phrase.
Elevator horror?
That's an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
I don't know. What is it?
Horror. It's kind of a descriptor that some critics use, some writing to, like you use the word auteur, it gives it a little elevated sense that it's better than
it's not just
horror.
Saw.
It's not just horror. Yeah. Anyway, there's a kind of a debate happening about this elevated horror name, and Jordan Peele tweeted just one tweet saying, I made a horror movie, because in some of the articles we're calling it elevated horror.
So that kind of implies that horror movies in the past don't deal with serious subjects, don't have subtext, which is not true.
Not true.
Right.
So. And George Romero was turning over in his grave because what is Night of the Living Dead if not a really intelligent story of communism and racism and all the evils in the world?
No, I think it just means it's good. I think it's just you're adding layers and it's deep and it has some ideas in it. I think that's just good quality storytelling.
Yeah. It's interesting because I've interviewed, not mentioning any names, some directors, and I'm not talking about friend of the show and not on the line, I should point that out, but some directors who have made genre movies but are very quick to say they're not making a genre movie. Like, and some Australian directors, I have to say.
As if there's some shame in it.
Well, a little, it's not just that. So it's some directors are very quick to say it's hypothetically a zombie movie, but it's not just that. It's elevated, da da da. And I find that a bit of a cheat. Like, if you make a genre movie, make a genre movie and make it for the fans of genre movies because they're.
What's wrong with a good genre movie?
Yes.
Those are great.
Yeah. So I have a bit of a beef with this whole elevated idea because don't shit on the genre that you're kind of wanting to emulate
by pretending it's something more. Yeah. If you end up making a very entertaining, good genre movie, I mean, that's an enormous feat. Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you are snooty about it, you're going to piss off the people who might otherwise have seen your film.
Yeah.
And also there's a segment of the audience who probably aren't inclined to watch it, and you saying it's better than the average thing they're probably not going to watch isn't going to make them go and watch it, I don't think.
Yeah.
So it's just a curious marketing thing for me.
Right.
Anyway.
I want to just quickly mention that I don't even, if by pointing it out, I'm making it a bigger deal than I want it to be, but when Jordan Peele was asked about how he's making his movies, what he likes about being called an auteur or and what it means to him, he said, I get to hire black people in my movies.
Yeah.
And I thought that was just tremendous because, I mean, obviously he's got a whole bunch of ideas in this movie and I'm not getting probably any of them, maybe one or two. So maybe race is involved in some way. But but to me, it felt like these are American families.
Yeah.
And we can just get used to seeing different kinds of people on screen without big pointers to it. And this is about this.
Yeah.
And so I think that going in this direction is tremendous. And that is tremendous that he's doing that.
Agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, another director would have been a white family with a doppelganger.
Yeah.
But
yeah, yeah.
They're not.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's, yeah, on that level, absolutely.
So Us is in theaters right now. So next we come to Project Blue Book, which is a new series on SBS and SBS On Demand. It's based on real UFO sightings and weird events that happened in the 50s. And it stars Game of Thrones actor Aidan Gillen. He plays a professor who joins an army pilot to try to rationalize why people have been seeing weird things, why the first episode is a pilot is basically in some kind of a dogfight with a UFO, and they try to figure out how did he experience this. The skeptical army guy thinks it's a weather balloon, and the professor is not so sure.
Mm-hmm. And the professor is a real person. It's
Oh, yeah, yeah. These are real people.
Joseph Allen Hynek, who is well known in UFO circles in science, quite renowned scientist.
He actually invented the term close encounter. Have you seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
I absolutely have.
That's
a couple
classic.
Times.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a retro X-Files, if you will. So yes, all set in the 50s, 60s. There's a lot of Cold War paranoia happening as well. There's some spies. There's men in black, strange men following people. And yeah, there's general paranoia around. There's duck and cover. There's fear of nuclear war, and strange sightings of UFOs. So a lot's going on, and this is all within that kind of a mindset. So the professor, his wife is quite paranoid. Their son is doing duck and cover drills at school. He's been recruited by the army to go on these missions of which she knows naught because he's not allowed to say. And each week it follows a real case. So they investigate a sighting in various far-flung places in America.
Project Blue Book is the case files that the government had that were recently released.
Yes.
They were under lock and key until very recently, and that's what the show is based on. So all of this stuff really happened.
Each week is one of these cases. And, Professor Hynek was recruited with a view to debunking the sightings. Like, it was assumed that he would find a scientific explanation, much like a weather balloon, to explain these mysterious goings-on because, God forbid, in this paranoid world, little green men start popping up and that's just going to make the hysterical masses even more hysterical. So that was the rationale behind recruiting him.
So during this period, there was over 12,000 sightings. Around 700 remain unexplained to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Why during this period were there so many sightings and why aren't there more sightings now?
How do you know?
But wouldn't you hear about them?
Well,
why aren't we hearing about these things? What's going on? That's just a kind of a side personal note.
People are sighting
them.
You're not looking in the right places, Nick. People are sighting them, but they're...
Are there subreddits that I need to be reading?
I really can't speak with any authority on that. I'm not limited to say. Let's just put it that way.
So I think it's safe to say that if you're into alien conspiracies, sightings, all of that sort of thing, this will be your bag. I mean, the stories are legitimately interesting. The premise is very interesting.
They are. And there's also, like a Mad Men kind of a lens to it. It's in the 50s. There's
red lipstick.
Sure. There is red lipstick and hoop skirts. But there's kind of the family element as well on the home front while he's off investigating.
Oh, yeah. Right.
And there's strange things going on. So it straddles a few genres here. And worth a look.
So fans of Game of Thrones, The Wire, the beginning of The Dark Knight Rises will recognize Aidan Gillen. I think he's great in all of that stuff. I think it's very good. And I actually got a chance to talk to him about this show. Let's hear a little bit of it. Aidan, nice to meet you. My name's Nick.
Hey, G. How's it going?
Pretty good. Thanks for making the time.
Yeah, pleasure.
Fantastic. Are you into UFOs?
yeah, I mean, I was, I'm not like a nut or anything like that, you know, I mean, I'm not like a pointy head kind of tinfoil hat man or anything like that.
No, that's a shame.
But, you know, I find the subject interesting, entertaining, fun, and, you know, maybe something a little more to, you know.
Right, right.
I don't believe that we're alone in the universe. So it's, you know, it's nice to speculate as to what that might mean. And we've been visited. I don't think we have. There are other interesting explanations for, you know, people seeing these things or thinking they see them or whatever. You know, it's not just about proving or disproving. It's a slightly, it's a bigger picture. And certainly the genre, or sorry, the era that we're, our show is set in, early 1950s America, you know, there was, had a lot of other potent factors. There was a combination of potent, you know, Cold War, fears, post-war,
right,
fears, optimism, technological advances, television emerging as mass media, or arriving as mass media, which, you know, all contributed to the, I guess, fascination with this, these unidentified flying objects, which were being reported suddenly left, right, center, including like lots of very credible reports, sightings, witnesses that wonder why would you come forward with that if you really didn't mean it, because you're a professional pilot or air traffic controller, and now you're potentially going to be ridiculed. So yeah, interesting world.
Have you ever been to Roswell, New Mexico?
I have not been to Roswell. That's in New Mexico. I've never made it to Roswell.
Yeah. It's something.
Yeah.
Well, Aiden, thank you so much for chatting with me. I really appreciated it.
Well, thank you.
Good luck with the show and the rest of the promotion.
Okay. Yeah. All right, brother. Thanks.
Take it easy. Bye.
See you. Bye.
So that was just a taste of Aiden Gillen. You can read the entire interview at sbs.com.au/guide.
And you can watch Project Blue Book on SBS every Thursday at 8:30 and catch up at SBS On Demand.
So now we come to the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching in our own time. Fiona, what have you been watching?
Off the clock?
Yeah.
I watched Hollow Man.
The Kevin Bacon movie.
Yeah. From the 90s.
Wait, is it Verhoeven?
Yes. Oh. Paul Verhoeven. Yeah. I don't know. There's not a lot to say, really. It.
What is the premise?
Well, he's a scientist, mad genius, and they're formulating a formula. To be invisible. So basically it's an invisible man
story.
Invisible man. And then he uses these powers inexplicably. You could do anything when you're invisible, but he just goes to spy on his ex-girlfriend and horrendously rape his neighbour.
Oh.
So, yeah.
That's not pleasant.
It's not pleasant.
Is Kira Sedgwick in it?
No, it's Elizabeth Shue.
No.
As said, that's ex-girlfriend. Right. Yeah, just one of those ones where, you know, you have these incredible powers and that's what you're going to go do. Anyway, it's very much of its time. I had quite fun watching it and slagging it off as I was watching it.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I just was a lazy, rainy weekend kind of movie. That. Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway, so that
right, okay.
was what I was watching.
Yeah.
But also, coincidentally, prior to watching Us, I watched Room 237, the documentary about all the theories about Stanley Kubrick's The Shining.
Right.
Which I love it. Every time I watch it, it's hilarious and riveting and quite convincing, some of the theories.
Are some of those theories? Because I'm not familiar with them.
Okay. So it goes deep into the theories people have that exist about The Shining, because it can be interpreted in many, many ways. So one theory is obsessed with the idea that Stanley Kubrick was involved in faking the moon landing.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah. And so, for instance, one of the tells, according to this theory, is when Danny stands up and he's in an Apollo jumper.
Oh.
Like a very incredibly 70s knit jumper. And that's, there are various, he plays with spaceships and it's, that's the tell. There's another one about, it's very obsessed with the hedge maze. It goes deep in that. There's an interesting one about the genocide of Native Americans, and it's, quite convincing when you're watching that one. And there's multiple theories, some of them quite laughable, some of them seeing that film in a whole new light. So that's Rodney Ash's film from a few years ago now. But yeah, very well worth a watch.
I wanted to see it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, you absolutely should. And it's interesting in the week we're talking about Us, because I can imagine a similar documentary about Us and about its...
Yeah, right.
The various theories being posited in that. I mean, go onto Reddit and see some of the theories about Us. I don't think Us holds up to The Shining in the same way, but I do think it, you know, sparks interesting theories. Anyway, what have you been watching?
So I went to see Dumbo.
Huh.
I had went to a screening. They put a little lifelike Dumbo outside the movie theater.
Oh.
And people were taking pictures of it. It was delightful. Dumbo is, of course, Disney's remake of its own cartoon from the 40s about an elephant that can fly, and it's directed by Tim Burton. So there are lots of Tim Burton flourishes. I didn't check if Danny Elfman did the score, but it sounds very much like a Danny Elfman score, like a lot of his movies, maybe all of them at this point. I thought that this stunk. I was very let down on a lot of levels. I think that 1941 cartoon, it's 62 minutes or something. And if you put aside like lots of cartoons from the time, some of the racism and some of the other uncomfortable bits, it is an extraordinarily powerful movie. The way that they make you feel for this outcast elephant, because he's got the big ears. So he's trodden upon and his mother is put in prison. And their relationship is amazing. It's just so beautifully done. And then, of course, when he learns how to fly and smite his enemies, it's probably one of the most satisfying movie experiences I've ever had. And this, because they got to make it a feature, they add so much to it, and all of it stinks. You don't care about any of these characters. None of the real life, like the kids. There's kids, and it becomes their story. And I couldn't care less. I wish maybe they needed to make the animals talk or something, because I wanted it to be only about Dumbo and what he wanted and his desire to reconnect with his mother and all of that. And
is it more Dumbo enables the children to
discover
themselves kind of thing? He's more the agent.
Yeah. And they help each other and it looks great. I mean, it's beautiful and it's got a bunch of fun Tim Burton weirdness.
Colin Farrell stuff, is that
Colin
right?
Farrell. I didn't care for his character or his performance. And even the kids, I found the kids a little bit irritating. But
Eva Green?
Yeah, there's just nothing to anybody. Even Michael Keaton, he's just kind of phoning it in. I don't think he cares that much. So they leave out Dumbo getting drunk. And I get it. You can't have a kids movie these days with an elephant getting drunk. So the pink elephants sequence, that is adapted weirdly. The mouse is gone. And... yeah, it just doesn't leave you anything to feel, really.
I presume it's made for audiences who haven't seen the original. Like, kids today not have seen the earlier
Dumbo.
Yeah,
I guess
all of the remakes are kind of discovered this one.
So, yeah, what are we to do with these things? Because all of these Disney live-action remakes, I think they look bad. Like that Aladdin looks like trouble. There was another one, wasn't there?
Oh, there was the Mary Poppins, which you had a similar opinion of.
Yeah, I didn't care for that. Beauty and the Beast. It's just, I can't unwatch the original cartoons that everybody loves. You know, what are we supposed to do with this stuff? You can't help but compare it.
Yeah. No, if you've seen the original, of course you're going to compare it. Yeah. But I do think Disney is remaking all of its classic animated movies because it's a generation or a couple of generations in some cases since those movies, and they're not really readily available anymore, certainly on streaming services. No one's really looking up the old Dumbo.
Oh, except on Disney's new streaming service.
Sure, but, you know, this is a chance to redo all its properties. So,
but it's so much worse. I would rather, this is a little weird to say, but I would rather suffer through the racism and anachronistic stuff and weep when the mother's trunk is reaching out of the jail cell to cradle her baby. I mean, it doesn't get better than that. And they tried to do it again, and it's just not even close.
Did you take your kids?
Yeah.
The
3-year-old wanted to leave almost immediately. He doesn't have time for anything except for Paw Patrol. The 8-year-old was into it. They even interviewed him afterwards, asked him what he liked about it. He said, Dumbo flies. And He was into it. He's becoming very easy to please. We have to talk to him about standards because of being more discerning.
Ask him to rate them every time.
Yeah.
Assign numbers to them.
He started a movie journal.
Aye.
But he's giving everything 5 stars.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Oh, to be so happy.
Yes. To be so easily entertained. Dumbo is in theaters now. Well, that's it for our show. Depending on whatever app you're using to listen to the podcast, make sure you have subscribed to SBS The Playlist. Leave a review, some stars. It helps people find the show.
We should get your son to rate it. Yeah. 5 stars for everything.
Yeah, 5 stars. Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant analysis. 5 stars. If you want to get in touch, we're at SBS Movies on Facebook and Twitter. I'm on Twitter at Nick Basine.
I'm on Twitter at Anything But Fifi.
The Playlist is produced by Jeremy Wilmot. See you next week.
Thanks for listening.